This is Jack's Journal, an in-depth look at issues that affect you and your community.
Back to school time is such an exciting time, but can also be a worrying time and a stressful time, not just for parents, but for students as well. Joining us to talk about how we can help our students be better equipped to handle the school year, not just physically, but emotionally as well, is Courtney Schauder. She's the health engagement consultant with United Healthcare. She specializes in behavioral strategies. Courtney, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me today.
So talk a little bit about your background and how did you get involved in behavioral health?
Sure, absolutely. So I am a registered dietitian, and within that field, you can go so many different ways. I spent many years working particularly in behavioral health settings. I worked with children and adolescents and adults in the field of eating disorder treatment. And amongst that, we often worked with anxiety and depression, oftentimes seeing those conditions right alongside eating disorders. And I became very familiar just with the behavioral health care treatment world and really what adolescents and children need in order to recover from those conditions, and especially how to identify those conditions.
Did you concentrate on adolescents for a particular reason?
You know, when it comes to adolescents, not only are you working with adolescents, but you're also supporting parents. And I think that's a really nice way to, you know, kind of fill your days is you're getting to provide education and support to both parties. So, you know, of course, when you're working with children, the parents and helping them help their child is just as important as the work you're doing with their child.
And it must be so rewarding to be able to help so many people, because it's so vexing for parents when their child is going through something, in so many cases, something that they themselves do not understand.
That's right. Yes. And, you know, we always, you know, encourage them that, you know, there's so much space for learning, and, you know, often nothing they did is the cause of this, but we can only move forward and really look at strategies and education to help, you know, pave the way to a better place.
From a practice perspective, are you seeing more cases of students who are suffering from mental health issues?
So in general, the levels of diagnosed anxiety and depression have risen over the last couple of years in the children and adolescent age ranges. And so it's just critically important to understand the importance of emotional and mental health, you know, all throughout the year, but especially going into a school year, there can be so many changes. It's a really great time to have those conversations and start talking about it more.
Okay, and particularly, why is the very beginning of the school year a stressful time, such a stressful time?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot about the change of routines. And so oftentimes in summer, you know, children and adolescents might be bouncing around from summer camps. They might be able to have different start times of the start of their day, and what time they're going to bed looks a little bit different. You know, oftentimes there's a lot of transition. You know, you're going into a whole new grade. That means new teacher, new classmates, new lunch hour, you know, new, you know, just paths, you know, what class am I going to win? It's a lot of unknowns at times, and it takes just getting into the swing of things to feel more comfortable with it as the weeks go on. But those transitions can be challenging for many children and adolescents. So we just want to really validate that and understand that it's important just to provide them support around that.
So Courtney, you know, it's everyone gets the back to school lists, and everyone works to check off all of the things that they need on their back to school list. What should parents and caregivers and guardians be checking off on the list of their prospective students? Are there ways that they can check in with students to kind of gauge what their mental health is?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, asking open-ended questions and just bringing up mental health, just talking about it in general, shows your child that it's okay to have those conversations, and it's okay to just even talk about how you feel. Sometimes children and adolescents have a hard time even expressing those emotions and those feelings. And, you know, if your child is able to talk to you about feeling nervous or scared or just a little unsettled with the transition that's about to happen, like I mentioned, just validating their feelings, that's going to really help them feel secure and just let them know that, it's okay. It's normal to feel this way. We expect it to get better and feel better for you as the weeks go on. But recognizing it's a scary thing at times to share emotion, and it can be sensitive. So really just being empathetic, staying open, and being patient can just go a long way and help your child feel heard and optimistic that they will be okay.
And this is going to sound silly perhaps, but tell us what an open-ended question is, because I think a lot of parents at the beginning and close of every day will say to their child, are you okay?
Right, absolutely. So, I mean, it could be something like, you know, tell me what you talked about with one of your friends today, or tell me, you know, what was one thing you felt happy about today, or one thing that made you laugh today, you know, anything that can kind of steer us away from the simple, fine, good, you know, kind of closed door answers, and not being afraid just to pry a little bit more. You know, if they give a short answer, you can kind of expand upon that question. And we do find that those later evening times, as you're saying goodnight to somebody, those can be really genuine times to connect. It's at the end of the day when the stressors are behind us and it's a calm environment. So if you're able to find time that works well for you and your child to check in, you know, it can be at the dinner table, but it can also be at another time in the day.
And as someone who has raised a couple of children and read a slew of books, both fiction and nonfiction, about the stresses that children face, one of those coming to mind is the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series. Are there particular age ranges or grades that are especially vulnerable?
You know, I think about, you know, it's the transition from, you know, those very young ages. I'm also a mom. I have a child who recently went to kindergarten last year, and that was a big transition to go from a typical childcare setting to more of a structured school environment. I think anytime you have those big changes where the school might be changing, going from elementary school to a middle school, or going from a middle school to a high school, just anticipating that it's a whole new building, it's a whole new environment, be different children coming in from different schools that haven't interacted before. So I do think that those can be just milestones to wrap a little bit of extra support around.
And in all of the research that you read it's important to establish routines. First, before we talk about the specific routines, because many people are going to find this difficult to do this, but perhaps it's not as difficult as it seems. Why is it so important for a student to have routines at home?
So a routine from a parent really creates that consistency at home. And, you know, when we put ourselves back in the shoes of a child, consistency helps a child feel more confident and secure and stable. And so that can really help out the nerves of a new school year. So the home setting is meant to provide that structure and that stability for them. And so that's just why it's really important.
And for, say, a single parent who works a regular job, is it possible to have smaller routines, like little family traditions? Do those count? Or is it really necessary that the family be together every night at 6 o'clock for dinner at the table, et cetera? Because I think a lot of folks have a challenge doing that.
Right, absolutely. And I think we recognize those are the times we live in. You know, many families are on the go. They've got sports practices throughout the week. They've got, you know, whether it's band or, you know, arts practices. I mean, just lots of things going on. So I do think it's important for the family to have a come together moment, to have some traditions, things that they might do on a weekly basis. And that can just look different for every family. I mean, it could be something as Friday night pizza, you know, before we run off to different directions. It could be getting ice cream or frozen yogurt on a weeknight, you know, or just saying, okay, every Tuesday is going to be Taco Tuesday, and we're going to pack those tacos up and we're going to take them to the football game and the football practice. So I definitely think it's nice to have some consistency and just things that make you feel together as a family.
Okay, yes. For my family, it was Sunday bagels, and I'm happy to say that they still do that in college.
Absolutely.
We are talking with Courtney Schauder. She is a registered dietitian and the health engagement consultant with United Healthcare. Courtney, what are some of the things that people should be doing to establish routines around? For example, you know, is there a set time that families should sit down for dinner, or establish homework, or even limiting lights out?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that, you know, in general, the lights out, the bedtime, that routine, you know, amongst a lot of, you know, different schedules throughout the week, that might be the one that you can really create some consistency on, because we know sleep is critically important to our children and our adolescents. So I think having some guidelines around screen time prior to bed, having guidelines around what time you wake up in the morning, those are things we can try to be consistent with. When it comes to things like dinner time or homework time, you might have a few nights a week where you can all come together at the same time for dinner. Homework might be a little bit more variable. Sometimes homework gets accomplished on the way to and from certain things during the week. But I do think about the importance of sleep and having lights out time and ensuring that, you know, your child or adolescent isn't looking at their phone or looking at a screen when they should be sleeping. So it's great to put some guardrails around that.
And I love the way you say that, put guardrails around it. And I think, too, explaining to children the importance of sleep, it's not just that you want them to close their eyes for a certain amount of time, but the brain is actually cleaning itself out and regenerating certain systems in the body while they sleep.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, quality sleep has an impact on our appetite and our ability to be physically active and how much energy we can put into those physical activities. So, you know, it affects our mood. So it's really key that we provide some structure around that, just like we have to provide structure for kids and adolescents around other pieces of their lives too.
So let's break apart the dietary part of this, since you are a registered dietitian. How important is it for children to have, and by children, I mean pretty much through high school. So they probably don't want to refer to themselves as children, but let's face it, we're talking about seniors in high school and freshmen in high school, as well as your kindergarten student. How important is it for them to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner and, you know, have good nutrition throughout the day?
Right. I mean, critically important. You know, we all know that there have been studies on, you know, looking at breakfast and test taking, but it really does give your body the energy to start your day. So, you know, usually children and adolescents, their last meal or snack is, you know, a couple hours before bedtime. And that means that their body has not had anything to eat or drink in a while. And so we do need to kind of refill that tank and let them run out the door with some energy so they can focus. I do think, you know, of course, having lunch is really important. I love school lunch just for the fact that there's variety and there's exposure there. So, you know, you can do a blend of packing lunch and buying lunch. But, you know, I do think that it's nice for kids to see different fruits or vegetables or different entrees at their school lunch than you might fall into the routine of what you pack at home. So there can always be some benefit for, you know, keeping things easy, letting your kids buy lunch at times, packing lunch at times. And then, of course, dinner, too. I mean, a true meal really should kind of keep us fueled for around 4, maybe 5 hours or so. And when you've got really active kids, snacks play a huge role in refilling their energy tank, allowing them to focus, regulating their mood. So it's all very important and just all interwoven to let them, you know, just do the things they have to do all throughout the day, like homework and other activities and things that they're trying to accomplish.
So let's repeat that, because of the fact that you said it is critically important for students to start their day off right. And that may not be when they first wake up, right? It might be, you know, maybe some children don't want to eat right away in the morning, but they can eat on their way to school.
Right. Absolutely. Yes, that would be fantastic. You know, and we want to remember, too, that children and adolescents, they have their own internal hunger and fullness guides. So as much as we can recommend, you know, 3 meals and snacks a day, we may find some kids that can meet their energy needs in a little bit of a different pattern that works for them. So one size doesn't fit all. But at the end of the day, it's just very important that you are getting the nutrition that your body needs and that you're not under eating or overeating apart from what your body is guiding you towards.
Among the things that Northeast Florida parents need to pack or check off on their list, including pencils and notebooks and a backpack and things like that, are snacks. So I'm going to give you a chance to kind of nerd out a little bit here. What are some of your favorite go-to snacks for children?
You know, as much as we hear, you know, carbohydrates talked about as, you know, in our adult society as, you know, just something to dive deeper into, I want to just emphasize that carbohydrates are the energy source. So we definitely need to have carbohydrates as a part of a snack for a child. And, you know, that can be accomplished through something fresh, like a fresh fruit. That's going to give us great, usable, quick energy from carbohydrates. We can also have that accomplished through some of those more traditional kind of, you think of snacks like graham crackers or animal crackers. And so all of those are okay. It's really about the balance and the moderation. We also want to think about including some fiber in that snack. Fiber can help us feel a little bit fuller for longer. And especially putting together a carbohydrate with an item that has protein and fat in it. So, you know, this is the classic example. You know, grab a string cheese alongside those animal crackers, and there you have protein, fat, and carbohydrates. It doesn't have to be, you know, what somebody would define as the perfect healthy snack. You know, we want to let kids be kids and let them enjoy food, but we also want to present them with some variety. And at times just reminding them, hey, you haven't had anything fresh today. Let's have an apple with this snack too, so we get some of those fresh fruits in. But I really try to stay away from really kind of black and white labels like good and bad, just trying to kind of promote everything in moderation, but just being mindful about what we put together so we stay full and we stay energized at the same time.
So let's talk a little bit about how that food affects someone's mental health. So certainly there's a concern in this country, especially, that, you know, we're not eating right. There are new studies out that show that almost a third of our students are undergoing some mental health crises. I'm sure that some of it is a result of the pandemic and social media and things like that. But is some of it the result of the fact that we're not eating right?
You know, when it comes to eating right, I mean, I think about the effect that proper intake can have on the stability of mood. So when we're thinking about things like anxiety and depression, those are, you know, diagnoses that need to be made by a mental health counselor or a pediatrician. I do think nutrition can play a role in helping somebody get to a good place, but it's just one piece of the puzzle when it comes to support and treatment. So I definitely do think that regulated intake is going to promote a little bit more of a stable mood. We're not going to have those huge hunger swings of up and down with blood glucose. And so that's really when it goes back to putting together the right type of nutrients at your meal. So make sure you have proteins and fats and carbohydrates on your plate, making sure you're enjoying your food. Those are going to give you energy, also kind of keep you regulated. So we don't want to be going long periods of time without eating. That can just make it really hard to concentrate and focus. That can definitely make us short-tempered. We hear that term, hangry. It's just something to keep in mind when we're looking at the whole picture of mental health.
Are there specific things that parents should look out for with regard to their child's eating habits that may indicate whether or not there is an issue? And I know specifically you have had, you know, some work with dealing with adolescents who are having eating disorder issues. So are there things that we should be looking out for?
So the number one thing I would say just to look out for is a change in eating habits. And that's just a really broad statement. You know, I think when we think about concerns, a change in eating habits could be that all of a sudden somebody decided, I don't want to eat my lunch. And so we want to dig a little bit and understand why and try to course correct in a sense. You know, a change in eating habits can be something, you know, of significant concern. And it can also just be something that we just need to do a little bit of adjustment around and ask some questions and try to understand what might work better. And is it the food choices that you're not liking or something else? But I would say in a whole context, when we think about mental health, a change in eating habits can be a sign that we just need to talk a little bit more, ask a little bit more questions. We want to make sure that we're not going down the wrong path when it comes to eating habits and just misinformation. There's a lot of misinformation about there when it comes to nutrition that's just easily accessible for some of our younger children and adolescents.
Would some of those changes be a change in diet?
Yes. So I would say, you know, removing a food group or making significant overhauls of choices of foods would count as a significant change. So it definitely warrants more questions, more education, potentially offers to meet with a nutrition expert, like a registered dietitian, just so that sometimes somebody other than parents, when they're conveying information, can have a different type of impact and have a different type of conversation. So I definitely think that those big overhauls would be considered a significant change.
Okay. And how do you have any recommendations for approaching your child? You don't want to say, oh my goodness, you've suddenly become a vegan. Now I'm worried that you have an eating disorder. Is there a better way to approach your child about that?
Yeah, sure. So I think reflecting what you're seeing, so you can say something like, I've noticed that you are not wanting to consume certain products anymore. Can you tell me, you know, what are thoughts behind that? I'd really love to know. Maybe you've read something that's new information for me, you know, really trying to align with them and understand what they are interested in about it. And then you just kind of reflect back, like, that's really interesting. I think it's great that you have an interest in nutrition, that you want to know more about it. And just really from there, offering to let them speak with somebody who could give them guidance, you know, and say, hey, if this is something you want to do, let's make sure you're doing it the right way. Let's talk about how we could, you know, kind of blend this together with how our family typically functions. You know, we kind of all have to work together here, but offering to give them some additional guidance, I think, is a great next step.
Okay. And one of the things that I had talked with someone about was you have to say something about the fact that this is not just a girl's problem and it's not just a teenage girl's problem. So I think one of the things that we're finding is that as mental health issues increase in our society, so too is the broad spectrum that it is affecting. So, i.e., we're seeing it in younger students and we're seeing it in boys as well as girls. This is not just a problem that teenage girls deal with, right? This is a problem that, you know, your 7-year-old boy could handle or could deal with as well.
Right. Absolutely. Yes. We do not want to lose sight of that. From a body image perspective, boys can affect in a different way, but in a similar context, that they have an overfocus at times on body image that leans into an overfocus on nutrition. So we want to make sure we're staying very moderate and balanced with our intake and asking these open-ended questions to boys and young children as well. I mean, I definitely cannot state that enough, that we need to have eyes open for every single child and watch for some of these, you know, red flags.
And as students are getting ready to go back to school, they're also getting ready to participate again, for those who didn't participate in the summertime, in intramural sports. And that is an area that where the competition can both be good and bad for mental health as well. So are there specific things that we should look out for on the sports field aside from eating disorders?
So when it comes to the sports field, you know, what comes to my mind is just thinking about mental health and perfectionism. So, you know, we know that there can be a lot of pressure associated with some of these sports and oftentimes a drive for perfection. And that sometimes can spiral into just kind of feeling the need to control other elements of a life. So I just think that it's incredibly important to have a network of support around somebody just to provide them with that feeling of security and understanding and empathy. You know, at times sports may be tough. There might be that drive for perfectionism, and that's really where a conversation about just not being perfect comes into play, and trying your best and trying to go back to the values of who you are as a person and what you're, you know, out there for. What are those main reasons? And we still need adult guidance for that at times.
Courtney Schauder, health engagement consultant with United Healthcare, thank you so much for sharing your insight with us.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Jack's Journal, a production of News 104.5 WOKV.